Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, welcome back to The Pod Crashed. This week, we're telling the story of Pan Am Flight 6. Thanks for listening.
Oh, that, Mariah.
What? How are you, Casey?
I am illiterate. But
that's a wonderful word for it.
I read a lot for this one.
Oh.
Which is very hard.
You're like a video audio learner.
Oh, I need. Brian was like videos on YouTube that are just people or like an automated reading of like Wikipedia articles or like Reddit posts and stuff like that. Brian's like, who are these for? And I'm like, they're for me.
They're for me. Yeah.
They're for me. Like the other views on there are just me previously.
Repeatedly.
Like it's all, yeah. It's just like, but this required reading with the eyes and I hope it's worth it.
Yeah.
So
I'm very excited.
Do you remember a while back we did Pan Am 7? It was the strata cruiser that crashed in the ocean in like the 50s. And
yeah.
there was a lot that could have gone wrong with that plane.
Yeah.
So at that time, when we did that episode, I mentioned that the Stratocruiser, while beautiful, elegant, gorgeous, just everything you could want in a plane, they made 56 of them, and 13 of them had crashes that resulted in like a total hull loss, like
right.
13, like 25%.
That's insane.
It's not good. So at that time, we talked a little bit about like problems other ones who them had had. And I mentioned that it could be fun to do a different story about like the same, basically like the same plane, but a different story, like
yeah.
not the actual same exact aircraft, but that type of aircraft and like
yeah.
Pan Am and everything. So we're doing
awesome.
It today. Pan Am 6 instead of Pan Am 7.
Great.
And we are going back to 1956. A Boeing 777, that's like the proper name for a Stratocruiser. They
okay.
are truly gorgeous. I mean, just beautiful, beautiful planes. They were aircraft that like were definitely made with World War II in mind. And they are like, they land right there on the water, which is fun. We love it. I think that's so cool. And Indiana Jonesy, like,
yeah.
And
so
they,
impressive.
Oh, they could actually hold like 100 people, but instead they would hold like 50 people and
yeah.
they would all have like a room, like in a little den for all the people. It's very, very cool. This one has 31 souls on board, 7 crew, so 3 flight attendants and 4 pilots. So those 4 pilots would be first officer or a captain, first officer, just like every plane has right now, plus a flight engineer, which planes had, you know, not so far into the past, right?
Right.
You would have a flight engineer. And then at this time, they also had a navigator, because there's not like computers doing all of the navigating and GPS and all of that. So that's the 4 cockpit crew. And then our flight attendants, we are getting names for everybody. Flight attendants are making the experience luxe. Now, these like Pan Am 6, Pan Am 7, Pan Am 8, these are flight numbers associated with these around the world flights they would do. So cool. Like, just unfathomably cool.
Truly.
The flight, yeah, they would go from Philadelphia, which for anyone who doesn't know is on the east coast of the United States. They would go from there, then they would go around the world and like finish at San Francisco, which you still have to get from San Francisco to Philadelphia,
right?
You still got to get the rest of the way. You don't start a new life in San Francisco, but yeah. I guess maybe if you don't have to go back to Philly, if you're from like Houston or whatever, I guess that's why it's around the world and they just put you on the other end of the US and you can get wherever you're going from there.
Yeah.
This particular one, Pan Am 6, the direction it goes in, is Philadelphia. Not Philadelphia. This actual aircraft could start in Philadelphia or Terminal 1 or Terminal A at LaGuardia, the Marine Air Terminal, I'm pretty sure oldest continuously in service commercial terminal in the world, which
right.
at this time it was like a marine terminal. Like, it was like a dock
yeah.
for boat planes. Just love it so much. And I love
yeah.
Terminal A. And if you fly in or out of LaGuardia, JetBlue owns it now, which is a real bummer. But just check it out. I don't know. It doesn't look
yeah.
like anything, but like check
sure.
it out. It's cool. Gonna fly from either LaGuardia or Philadelphia and then to London, Frankfurt, Beirut, Karachi, Pakistan, Rangoon, Burma, Bangkok, Thailand, Hong Kong, or Tokyo. And I couldn't figure out for some reason which one this actual plane we're going to talk about today did, if it stopped in Hong Kong or Tokyo. Honolulu, San Francisco. Like, that's a cool trip.
Very cool trip.
Yeah. Like,
lots of variety.
I also think lots of variety, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Some serious variety. I guess nowhere. Depending on the time of year, even like Frankfurt might be cold. I don't know. London might be cold. Like you could
yeah.
have like every weather. Like it's
right.
so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
that's very
it's cool.
cool.
And the two legs of that flight, right, are going to be the two legs that are going to be the longest and like the most over water are obviously when you fly from the East Coast of the U.S. to London. And when you fly from Honolulu to San Francisco, those are healthy legs. Like that's
yeah.
like a pretty good, decent length flight. Right. And today we're in the fall. We're in October. I'm sure it's beautiful. Probably a good time of year to go to like all these places.
Yeah.
Right. Like
oh,
not
totally
a milder time of year.
Yeah.
It's probably nice for every single place on this list. Someone's going to write and be like, actually,
it's
like,
terrible,
Karachi
right?
is unbearable in October. I don't know. I'm sorry. Educate me, please. So the 31 of us are flying this gorgeous, super dangerous, oh my God, plane with four prop engines. So there's the external big propeller just zooming around and they've got four of them. So it's definitely going to be loud, but
yeah.
they did their best to like soundproof it with, you know, did the best they could with what they had and made it as luxe as possible. Our captain is Captain Richard Ogg. His last name is OGG. That's a good name. Ogg.
Yeah.
yeah. He's 43. We got George, the first officer. He's 40. We got Richard, the navigator. He's 31.
Two Ricks.
And we got
two.
And actually, Rick. Like, double Rick, Richard, Dick, Rick.
All of them.
I know I should give them different names. That name just went right out of style. I don't know what single Richard.
You know what's
right?
funny? It's like, the only reason I noticed it is because our CEO's name is Rick, but it's Richard.
Oh, right.
And I don't know. I was talking to him last week, so it's like, it's
yeah.
been on my
You're
brain.
Like, wow, just popping up. Yeah.
So many Ricks.
Yeah. The flight engineer's name is Frank. A good name. Frank.
Such
Lil
a
Frankie.
Great name. Lil Frankie.
He's 30. Good age.
Aww.
Everything is good.
Sweet
and
Frank.
Then Our flight attendants, or obviously stewardesses, as they were called at the time, we've got Mary, Catherine, and Patty. And we love them. We love
Couldn't
our girls.
Have
They're
named
the best.
Them better.
Right. Exactly. No, totally. Right. Oh, they all have the whole, if we did whole names on this show, like Mary is like Mary Ellen Smith or something close right. to that. I don't remember last, like just beautiful yeah. names. I love them. I love every single person. I love 100% of this crew. They're fantastic. Okay. So Pan Am uses the Stratocruiser for this flight. They also sometimes, they use the Stratocruisers and they also use the DC-6B, which was like another plane that was like originally, it's a comparable plane that was also developed with World War II in mind and now is being used for commercial aviation. And when they actually leave the U.S. at the beginning of this flight, they're actually in a DC-6, but then they switch it at some point and end up in a Stratocruiser. So on this day, October 15th, there is a little bit of weirdness. I'm going to say this right up front. There's some weirdness with the dates and times for all of these. And I tried to just choose, like, pick a lane and stick to it.
Yeah.
But we're talking about an around the world flight. So days and times are just going to be.
Yeah.
Like, what time is it right now? It's 9:05 p.m. where I am, but where is it where you are? Right.
Exactly.
Like, it's so.
That's weird.
So if you, anybody like looks into this and notices different times and things like that, it might be my mistake, but it might just be because like their reference to time is different.
Yeah.
In different articles and things like that. So I'm just going to say October 15th, they in the evening, they've flown around the world. Everyone is in Honolulu, just soaking up the sun and enjoying the beauty of the world. And trips over. So everybody boards up the plane in the evening to head towards San Francisco. And so everybody boards up. They have dinner. It's very luxe. Most of the passengers have cabins. There is like a less expensive ticket you can buy on this around the world flight where you don't have your own little like bed, mm-hmm. but you have like, there's a lounge and with like couches and like big chairs. And then you have like a seat that is like a big recliner basically. So people who are just like,
sounds good to me.
Good enough. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Like, this is not bad.
Right.
So There's a few passengers who don't actually have a bed and they have like this a recliner, but the passengers one way or the other, they board up, they take off into the sky. The pilots are up front having their dinner and, you know, whatever, doing their thing. The flight attendants are giving everybody this very luxe experience and yeah, they're flying. They keep going, like time ticks by, they're over the ocean. Outside, it's like complete darkness. I don't know if you could, I think it would depend on the angles. So the cruising altitude is a lot lower at this time than it would be now. So I don't want to pretend to know things I don't, but the, so I guess I wonder if you can see stars out of the sky, out of your
right.
window on the plane. Yeah. And I don't know. I think probably the pilots can because they're like the windshield is up higher
right.
than windows are on the sides of the planes. But if you can't see stars, then it's 100% black outside,
yeah.
like just pure darkness, like darkness. That's like hard to really even imagine because it's pretty rare unless you are flying over the ocean, right?
Right.
Even in the dead of night. But so time ticks by. Everybody has their dinner. Everybody gets cozy and comfy and like is asleep. The passengers are all asleep. Patty and Catherine are like asleep too. Because like, hey, like, yeah, it's fine. You got to sleep sometimes. Like, right. So, and Mary is the one who's on duty. So she's up and like reading magazines and seeing if anyone needs anything. They're getting close to the halfway point. And the halfway point here is in the middle of the ocean. And at this time, the like radio communication, the way the aircraft communicate with people on the ground. We talked about this a little bit in the Pan Am 7 story, but there's going to be intentionally placed assigned points in the water where the U.S. Coast Guard has ships stationed. And when planes fly overhead, they get into contact with those ships to check in. And they do it all along the way so that ships hopefully are never going more than 60 to 90 minutes between having some kind of contact with the ground.
Right.
So they're getting close to the halfway point, and there's the November station, I believe it's called, in the ocean, where they're going to start to communicate with the Coast Guard ship that's down there waiting for them to say hi as they fly overhead. Mary comes in and she's, got to do something. And so she comes into the cockpit and chats with the pilots and asks them if they want anything to drink. And a couple of them ask for coffee and the captain asks for a Coke. And so she goes back. And as she's walking back, there's the sound of the engines that's ever present. But as she's walking back to the galley to get the Coke and the coffee, is she hears the sound on one side of the engine start to rev up louder, until it gets to this screaming high volume, and then whoomp, and shakes the cabin and knocks her down. And oh, that's not good. And so the Catherine and Patty wake up just like that. Pop, they're up, right? They're ready to go. Ready to find out what's happening. Some of the passengers wake up. Some of the passengers sleep right through it, but they pop up, and in the cockpit, the pilots are just flying along, starting to get in touch with the ship down below, and they hear the same sound that everyone else is hearing, but they can also see on their panel that engine one, the engine all the way to the left side, started to run away. This is just a dumb, terrible thing that these stratocruisers did. They sometimes, the propellers would just be I'm gonna do it, and they just run away and just become impossibly over speed.
Yeah.
So this engine has just decided that it's gonna just go to 100,000,000% all at once for no reason. And so the first thing you want to try to do is just turn it off. You want to turn off? Off, no more. And it's no, I'm doing it. And so the engine is just making this super loud sound and shaking the plane. And they try to feather it. They try to turn the propellers so that they're just reducing the drag on the plane so that they're less effective at their job, but also not creating additional drag. So they try to feather it, and the engine's no, and just keeps just going super, super fast. And it's making the plane want to rock up, because there's the speed of that propeller wants to lift the left side of that, of the plane, that left wing up. So they're having to steady it. And while they're trying to troubleshoot it, it's not listening to them. It's not doing anything they're telling it to do. And the captain says okay, well, we'll just turn off the oil too. We'll cut off the oil to that engine. Just cut it. No more oil for you. And it will die because it needs oil, right? So they cut it off the oil, and it just acts like nothing happened. It just keeps going, keeps going, keeps going. Patty comes in trepidatiously a little bit, just making sure she's not interrupting them, but what's going on? So Patty comes in, and the pilots explain to her that they have a runaway engine, which is a known problem on this aircraft, and it's not responding to their inputs. They have to turn down the power on the other engines, and they have to kind of fight the yoke to keep the plane level. It's not good, but we're okay. This is a version of okay. It's okay. So Hattie says, like, you got it. And she goes back and starts to explain to the other flight attendants. And while she's explaining to the other flight attendants what's going on, the captain makes an announcement, says, like, sorry to wake you up, but our number one engine is running wild. True. This is a quote. Okay. Sorry to wake you up, but number one engine is running wild and there might be a possibility of ditching. Because if they can't get it to slow down, they just, he's just saying, it's just a possibility. It's just possible. So the flight attendants take that very seriously. They turn on the lights in the cabin and start to direct passengers to, like, go to their seats and buckle up. And while they're doing that, again, it's a plane full of people. It's way, 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 way fewer people than there are on, like, the vast majority of commercial flights that we would take at any given time. There's 26 passengers. It's still 26 passengers, and it's 1956, and there's, like, little kids. There are these, like, twin 2-year-old girls, like, little kids, and 2-year-olds, people know, sweet, like, so sweet and so wonderful, and, like, a little cranky, wake them up at 3 o'clock in the morning and, you know, like, or whatever time their bodies think it is. So, you know, you've got, like, the kids being, like, fussy, and you've got a lot of folks who are, it's an around the world flight. So folks who don't understand English well, like, there's, like, a lot of different pieces, right? So they're trying to, like, get everybody comfy, and the passengers, again, can all hear this, like, the screaming of this engine on the one side, and they can feel the plane, like, just not flying as smoothly anymore because the other engines have all had to be turned down in order to keep things safe. But so the flight attendants get everybody, you know, and they're starting to, like, explain to the passengers, like, fill in some of the blanks, go through, like, procedures in the cockpit. The pilots are, like, waiting and hoping that engine one is just going to seize, right? Like, they've cut off the oil supply. You and I, Mariah, know a person in real life whose car died at 80,000 miles because she didn't change the oil. You and I both know a person personally who did that, okay? Yeah. So they're hoping that that will happen sooner. Soon, please, right? Just no oil at all.
Yeah.
Please happen. Okay, so that boat, that ship that they have been in contact with, I'm going to butcher this pronunciation, but it's the USS Pontchartrain. Pontchartrain? We're just going to say Pontchartrain.
Yeah.
And the Coast Guard is, like, talking with them, and as they're going this, bam! The engine seizes, and when it seizes, it makes, like, this, like, rocks the whole plane because it like breaks the internal things as the lack of lubrication causes all that stuff to grind together and smash together, and finally, bam, like, just snaps internally, shakes the whole plane, but, like, good. Like, you deserved it, engine. Like, what are you doing? Causing trouble. Okay, so now that engine is dead, but because they weren't ever able to feather the propeller, it's creating a lot of drag on that side. So in order to make up for the lack of power and the increased drag on that side of the plane, they have to rev all three other engines up, 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 up to, like, the it's really a funny acronym or whatever that it's the maximum power other than takeoff. Like, so it's not takeoff speed, because that will kill these engines, God bless them, fast, right? Like, they get, like, 60 seconds of takeoff speed, right? But it's as high as it can go without maxing out and putting it at even more risk. So we've got those three engines revved pretty high and one engine that's not producing any power at all and creating a lot of drag. So they're talking to this boat, the USS Pontchartrain, and it's pitch black outside, and they're doing their calculations about, like, the fuel consumption and the drag, and the plane is, like, having a hard time maintaining its altitude, and they're like, there's nowhere to land. They're halfway. All of this happened at almost exactly the halfway point between Honolulu and San Francisco. And there is nothing. There's nothing there.
Yeah.
There's nothing there. There's no islands. There's no nothing. And they're doing these calculations and they're like, we're going to have to ditch in the ocean. And they ought to figure out how to do that or what that's going to look like. And the flight attendants start to prepare the cabin for a ditching. And so they have everybody like take off your shoes, put on your life jacket. Don't inflate the life jacket. Don't inflate the life jacket. Don't inflate the life jacket until you're outside the plane and in the, like, don't inflate it. Keep it on. Take off anything sharp out of your pockets, anything sharp. And it's one of those things I think about where, like, if you tell somebody, like, take out anything sharp off or, like, out of your pockets, what people think of is going to be different, right? Like, there's going to be people who don't even think to, like, remove, like, a wedding ring that right. is sharp and things like that. And then there's people who are going to, like, really go, like, pull the buttons off. Like, there was somebody who, like, had a garment on that had buttons on the exterior, like a jacket with buttons, and they, like, took that off because, like, I don't know, are these buttons gonna pop a life raft? I don't know, right? And there's a passenger who had a crucifix and, like, removed the, had a rosary rather, and removed the crucifix from the rosary because, like, the rosary beads are, like, not sharp, but the crucifix is sharp. And so people are, like, going through that. The little twins, these twin 2-year-old girls who just got woken up in the middle of the night and are now being forced to sit still in, like, an incredibly noisy aircraft, and it's popping, and, like, there's the, like, the, it's extremely loud sounds, and all of this are fussy babies. And the flight attendants come over, and, like, the parents are obviously very, like, upset and also embarrassed and, like, all the different emotions. And Patty, like holds, because they don't want to put the life jackets on, and she has to, like, basically, like, physically, like, hold, not just hold the baby, but, like, pin her arms down so they can put the life jacket on. And it's so scary. And they in the cockpit, though, they're talking to the Pontchartrain, and they are, the Pontchartrain is, the vibe they're bringing is like, it'll be fine. It's fine. The ocean is so still and peaceful right now. It's fine. Like, for whatever, I don't know, it's this is 11 years after World War II ended, like, the people running the ship, like, some, what, it's fine. You're fine. And I mean, they're taking it seriously. I don't want to act like they were dismissive, because they're taking it very seriously. They're giving them all the relevant information. But for example, they're like, you know, the water is 74 degrees. Like, it's fine. You're fine.
Right.
It'll be great. Like, it's no, like, so I hope that that's helping the pilots as they're, like, trying to do these calculations. There is recording of the, like, back and forth communication between them, and the pilots are more than happy to lean into the it's fine energy. So God bless them. The flight attendants are back there, like, wrangling babies and, like, just this very, very, very scary moment. And the pilots, in all seriousness, I have no doubt, are equally scared, but the vibe is different. So they are doing these calculations, and they're just not going to make it to San Francisco. They're just going to have to ditch in the ocean. But what does that mean if we have to ditch in the ocean? Like, what do we do? Because then there's, like, it's pitch black out and there's no lights. Like, we're not, you can't, if you can't see where you're going, how are you going to even come close to being able to safely land?
Right.
It's not a landing, it's a ditching on the ocean. So they're doing these calculations, and while they're doing these calculations, engine 4, the engine all the way on the right side starts to complain, starts to, like, basically it can't keep up this speed. It can't, it's overworking. And they try to feather the propellers of that one, and that one is listening to them, doesn't just run away. It lets them feather the engines, but they have to shut it down because it's going to, like, explode. And so now they only have two engines, and they really are having a very hard time maintaining their altitude. And they're like 4 hours from sunrise. And they have to, like, they can't maintain their altitude. And the most obvious thing is to dump fuel so that they're lighter, so they can maintain their altitude. But they need the fuel so that they can fly continuously in a circle above this boat in the ocean for 4 hours. And they, like, so how much fuel do you dump? How much fuel are you going to need? What's going to happen if we lose another engine and we only have one engine? Like, what, like, just all of this, just... they thankfully have a lot of brains in on it, right? Like, yeah. They're figuring it out. They've got 4 people in the cockpit doing those calculations and weighing the different options. And they've got the people down on the Pontchartrain. Like, they're also able to, like, advise, tell them what they think, tell them what they have available. Like, they're just going to try it. They're going to try to fly in circles above this Coast Guard ship until the sun is up and they can see the water and try to put it down in the water. And so they make another announcement to the cabin, because in the cabin, people think that this is, like, they kind of don't understand what's happening, which is pretty scary, about as scary as I can imagine, or they think that the ditching is, like, happening now. And they make this announcement where they say, like, we are definitely going to ditch, but we're going to wait for the sun to come up. So it's going to be a few hours. The captain, God bless him, is a gracious host and says, like, so, you know, everybody relax, get something to eat, stretch your legs, have a smoke. The actual quote, again, have a smoke, you know, just... because it's going to be a while. Now we're just waiting.
Right.
We're just waiting. We're going to fly in circles over the ocean, over this ship. And the Patty, Mary, and Catherine, get up, and everyone's barefoot, and they just slowly try to, like, kill time in a way that, and it's that the thing I keep thinking about is, like, I'm sure you've had this happen where you kind of got to kill time, but you're also extremely aware that you could forget something.
Right.
And that's a horrible feeling, like, where, because the thing is again, a ditching in the ocean is incredibly dangerous, actually, no matter how calm everyone is acting. It's extremely, extremely dangerous. And this is 1956. Like, people right. die in plane crashes much more often in 1956. And so the flight attendants, like, hand out cigarettes and magazines, and they hand out some, they serve some food, coffee. Patty at some point, like, gets up and goes into the galley and sees the coke that she had started to get out for the captain when she had originally gone in there. And she just sits there in the galley and drinks the coke. And that's just, what a goddess. Like, yeah. Yeah, girl. Just have it. Just take a minute for yourself. Yeah. Just take a minute. Yeah. So they, at some point, somebody has the idea, one of the flight attendants has the idea, like, oh, we can hand out pillows to the passengers so that they can, like, when they go into the brace position, they can, like, put their face on the pillow. That's a good idea, right? Like,
right.
Old school airbag, maybe, right? Yeah. And so they pass out pillows. They collect plastic bags and have people put like papers and important documents and things like that in the plastic bags. Like, but it's just that in the cockpit, it's just flying in circles for hours and hours and hours, and like trying to chit chat, trying to like keep an eye on everything. It's, you have to, it's like, you're pretty aware, right? Yeah. of what's happening, but it's just all four of the cockpit crew take turns like coming out to the passengers and like trying to make them feel like calm and relaxed and trying to let them like feel like it's no problem, it'll be fine. Everyone, all of the crew keep using the sight of the Pontchartrain. They're in complete darkness except for this little line of light down in the ocean. And the Pontchartrain is like, they put out like a APB basically to like all of the ships in the area and tell them to like make your way over here. This plane is like, it's a pretty rare thing to have a ditching that's planned hours in advance, right? So they're able to get other plane to cover other ships to come to the area to like help with any rescue. And
right,
so there's flying circles and watch the other two engines and hope that the other two engines don't give them any more trouble. And as it starts to get closer, some people fall asleep, because you will, right? Some people yeah. will. As it starts to get closer and closer to dawn, the pilots start to practice just like ascending and descending. So just seeing what they can actually do with two engines. Like if they come in to try to ditch, how easy is it for them to ascend away from the water if they want to like abort the ditching base, you know, like how, so there's no protocols for any of this, right? It's not. So they like try ascending and descending. They try there's going in big circles the whole time. Everybody just kind of like mills around until it's getting closer and closer and closer. And it's in that like light, like hazy pre-dawn time. And the Pontchartrain, they have foam, like flame retardant foam, the way that the stuff that like firefighters use at the airport. And they have that foam and they blow a bunch of it out onto the water, coat, make like a runway, air quotes, runway in the water where they want the plane to land. Like you ditch here.
Yeah.
And if something catches on fire, hopefully this will slow it down. And it gives you like a place to aim, lay that out for them. And the pilots can see them doing it. And it's time. The pilots are all in the cockpit. The flight attendants wake everybody up who's fallen asleep. They have people like put their life jackets back on. They reiterate for the millionth time, do not inflate your life jacket until you're outside of the plane. They make sure that everybody's gotten anything off, like sharp things. Anyone who's put your shoes on, take them off again. They go over like, these are the doors, right? And over the doors, there are inflatable life rafts. So they kind of like designate people like this passenger or that passenger, take the life jacket down. The navigator. So the navigator has, you know, like there's Richard number two, like he's, yeah. his work in the cockpit, right? He doesn't have he's not controlling a part of the plane.
Yeah.
Right. So he is going to come out and sit in the seat closest to the main door, the main entrance door, so that he can open it as soon as it's time. It's time. Sun's up. They can see the water. They can see the ship. They can see ships in the distance coming toward them to also be available to help. They can see that foam runway. Richard, the navigator, like sprints out of the cockpit and sits down next to the door, and like he straps in and says like, this is it, which it's like, oh boy, you're right. Like, oh, and so everyone is buckled in, and the parents of those like twins asks, they've been asking right along and they keep getting the answer, but they ask again about like how they should hold their kids, because each of the parents has one of the girls in their laps and are like holding them. And it's that the instinct, you want to strap them in like to you, yeah, like under the seatbelt next to your body, but that's very dangerous. You can't do that. Your weight will like smush them, right? So you have to like keep them outside. The kids could sit in their own seat, but they are little, right? They're little, and there's not guidelines for every little thing. It's 1956. There's not, everyone's just using their best judgment, right? So the parents are like holding, each of the parents have one of the little girls, and everyone is like just waiting and praying and looking out the window or closing their eyes or trying to deal with it however they can. And they've got the pillows in their laps, and the pilots make the announcement that they're going to land. They use the word land instead of ditch. And they say that they decide that they're going to do a practice landing first and then come around and do it, because they are, seems like they're able to ascend even with two engines as long as they don't push it. So they sweep around and they come down and they fly just like a couple inches over the foam, and then they lift back up, not very high, come around. The pilot makes the announcement after they rehearse the landing. He makes this last announcement and says, the conditions below are ideal. The water temperature is 74 degrees. The waves are only inches high. There's absolutely nothing to worry about. Things couldn't be better for us. I'll soon give you a warning. And 1 minute before we touch down, I'll tell you, this is it. Do as the stewardesses tell you, please. And he swings around and makes the announcement over the thing and says, like, this is it. They slide onto the foam, and then the belly of the plane slides onto the water. And for like the first moment, it's smooth. And then the left wing like dips into the water, and they hit the bam. Like the whole thing rocks forward and shifts back, and then harder, bam, forward. And both of those little girls go sprawling out of their parents' arms, and everything falls forward. And that wing, that left wing, starts to dip more into the water, and it feels like they're going to tip over. And they don't. The left wing bobs back up. The tail of the plane snaps and water starts to come into the plane. And the flight attendants and Richard, the navigator, jump up as soon as the plane is like still enough. They can feel the water like splashing onto them. And the flight attendants, Mary, Patty, Catherine, Richard, jump up, start to grab the rafts up out of the thing. Richard slams the door open, pushes the door open and inflates the raft, and then tries to shove the raft through. And Patty runs over to where the raft is, and it's the door that's closest to her, and the raft gets like stuck in the door, and Patty and Richard like just hurl their bodies against it, like ram into it, and pops out onto the water. The pilots who are still in the cockpit run out and start to like just grab people, yelling like, don't inflate your life jacket until you're outside. Everybody starts to jump, like file out, like just onto the wing or onto the out of the door, onto the raft, whatever door they're closest to. They start to spill out of it. Everybody like grabs like the little kids, like grabs whatever they, not whatever they can, not their stuff, but whoever they can. And everybody like spills out. And as they're spilling out onto the life rafts or onto the wing to wait to get into life rafts, there's already the Coast Guard from the Panchamont or whatever. They're already coming, and they're already like right there. They're right there already. They were waiting for this. And everybody lives.
Oh my God.
Everybody lives.
Everyone.
The plane sinks so fast.
The plane does not live.
The plane does not live. The plane sinks so fast, but not so fast. Like, but the people were faster. The plane sinks so fast.
Oh my God.
But they were faster. And they got out into those life rafts and they paddled on toward the Panchamont and they watch the plane just like vanish under the foam. Like,
oh my God.
And just. Everybody lived.
Everyone lived. Everyone lived.
Oh. There are tons, like an incredible amount of pictures and video of this, of the ditching, because the Coast Guardsmen, like on the ship, had cameras and took like pictures wow. of the landing, of everything. So there's like an old Life magazine article about this that like I found like the full article with the pictures. Yeah. The pictures are unfortunately like it just the quality of the uploaded magazine aren't that high. Like the quality is not that good, but I think it's still worth it. And I was thinking about reading, you know how what I really want to do is read Little House on the Prairie and yeah. just post that. But I was thinking about like as a like an extra like freebie or whatever, just reading that article and posting it as like a bonus. Yeah. Cause it is a good time. But
that'd be great.
Yeah. Everybody lived except
gosh.
The plane.
That's such a long time to be in such a state.
Hours. Oh.
And they had to like keep clear and like focus and like.
Oh my gosh. It's just. And again, like I just think about the. Like they were all asleep when this started.
Right.
And then you get woken up in like the scariest way possible. And then, yeah, like the people who could fall asleep, God bless them, right? Like that's honestly great that they could sleep because yeah. it is just waiting. But it's so scary and you're so full of like just stress hormones. And then just like people who can't, for whatever reason, either like small children
yeah.
or like folks who like just can't get the information in English and understand it,
yeah.
right? Like folks, it's an international flight. Like just how lonesome that can be anyway, but then how like lonesome and scary it would be in something like this. But I love thinking about the pilots just chatting it up with the Coast Guardsmen.
Oh,
like just
yeah.
having just, I mean, it's so scary,
right.
but like, I mean, all of these guys were in World War II, right? Like, not probably not the Coast Guard. I mean, some of the Coast Guardsmen, and then some of the Coast Guardsmen are going to be like 18, and they're probably on the, you know, on the radio, like razzing the 18-year-olds
yeah.
for not fighting in World War II or whatever. But like, just
no,
I don't know. It just like such a I'm so glad they lived because 4 hours, and then having like. Half of them die or something. I wouldn't
right.
have done. I just, at least not today. I wouldn't have been the day for that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But it's
well,
not
and I
that
think,
day.
Like then having to get back on a plane and go home.
Oh my gosh! Right. Yeah.
Like I'm only flying during the day.
Oh. Yeah. No. Stupid engines. Strata cruisers, oh, so luxurious and so
truly.
Deadly.
Yeah, real bad.
Oh my gosh, not good. Not good at all.
Can't
not
believe
good
they
at
lived.
All.
I definitely did not think. Like, no way.
I can't. the thought of, I know I like almost always hone in on this and it's like easier in this story because everyone lived, but just the feeling of like, it is so, so hideous to imagine like holding your baby and like feeling them get like ripped out of your arms by just the forces of like the crash. Like that is just, I can't, it just, and then like the thought of, then like scooping your baby up off the floor and they're okay.
Right.
Like that's such a relief, but oh my gosh, just the physical experience of that is so horrible.
Right. Cause you're also feeling the emotional side of it as well. Like all at the same time. It's just.
Well, and they're 2-year-olds and they're being like fussy because it's the middle of the night and just like how, what that's like when you're like really for whatever, whatever you have going on in your grown up brain makes you really, really, really want to like have like a nice moment with your baby, but your baby is just like, whatever. Yeah,
exactly. Oh. So many emotions.
So many.
Wow.
The thing that, like, the Life article, like, the Life magazine article specifically, is very, like, praises the kind of, like, stoicism and, like, the compliance of everyone involved so much. And that, it just jumps out at me that that is, like, I don't think
like very timely sometimes. Like
it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
It like that's is a very like timely such
way
a,
to write that article.
Like it's such a like a artifact of that time where like that's something like you praise those qualities.
Exactly.
Like people being like and people stoic like
wanted
in the face.
To read about it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And like celebrate and like be inspired by that like bravery or that. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's such like an interesting.
That is a good point. It's there are even very like few articles like that. Yeah, there. I feel like there are very few articles like that these days in reference to like the helpers or whatever. Like you know how Mr. Rogers says like watch for the helpers.
Yeah, Mr. Rogers.
Sweet Mr. Rogers. And it's just like not, I don't know. Yeah, it's definitely changed for sure. And just the verbiage and the tone, I think.
And part of it is also like if people are quiet in an emergency situation, what you chalk that up to. Like, are they quiet because they're like brave and stoic, or are they quiet because they're like frozen in fear? Because I feel like I'm very, very grateful to live in a time where you can like talk about your emotions more freely and with less shame. Like, I'm very grateful for that. And I think that there is like a, I think that a lot of times people have a really hard time making sense of their own emotions and behavior in really extreme situations.
Mm.
And probably there are, not probably, certainly there are people who do respond in like, with like obedience, like compliance, like tell me what to do and I'll do it. Like, let's do it, which is very, very, very good. And that actually is most of the time, like, like if that's your instinct, it's a good instinct, right? It's not a bad instinct, but we like don't have a lot of, I do feel like maybe it's an underappreciated instinct in general now, maybe like the just fucking do what the stewardesses tell you to do. Like they are like, just because we're calling them flight attendants because they are there primarily for your safety.
Right.
But like, they're the stewards of your life right now. So so help them out. Like, just
let them steward.
Yeah. Let them be good stewards of your well-being and just do what you're supposed to do. You know, like, I do feel it's an underappreciated quality.
Yeah.
And I don't know, but I'm not saying that to like, I don't know. I'm not, whatever.
No, it's like, not
we
like
the guy last time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like
throwing his overhead.
This. Yeah, exactly. Like, we're not wishing to go back or anything like that, but it's, yeah, I don't know. A poignant
one of these days. Yeah. Yeah. One of these days we're going to do Jal 123. And like Japan Airlines, like, there's a great deal of that, you know, in the 80s on that plane. And I think that that's, again, there is like a cultural element. I don't know. It's just so interesting to me, like how it just is so noticeable.
Yeah.
How different, like if this same article was written about the same thing, they would probably emphasize the like fear, right? Like the emotional side of it, I would think. Totally. And they would probably emphasize, like, maybe I'm probably biased because I just got to tell the story and I got to emphasize what I wanted to emphasize. Right. So you already maybe know what I think, right? Like our girl drinking that Coke in the galley and just taking a minute for herself.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I don't think I've ever related to someone more in one of these stories.
Right.
Than just like,
yep.
I'm just gonna take a minute and I'm gonna drink this Coke. And I'm not going to bring it to the captain. Exactly. I want him to have what he needs. I'll bring him a different one. If he wants one, I'll bring him a different one.
Of course.
I'm just going to drink this in silence.
This Coke is mine right now. I need this.
This Coke is mine. This moment is mine.
Yeah.
We're going to be up here for 4 hours. I'm drinking this Coke. Like that. I did actually do that too. Like sometimes on like horrible, like not dangerous, thank God, but horrible days at the airport when it was just like every flight was canceled.
Yeah.
Like go down to the plane. I'd be like, I'm just going to go, you know, like ask, like see if there's any updates from the crew. And I would go down and then just, and like, I would, obviously I want to know if there's updates. Of course. I also don't, I want the information too, but like, I'm just going to sit here and have a snack.
I'm
just going to take them. I'm going to use the bathroom on the plane because if I try to use the regular bathroom, people are going to like hound me while I'm like washing my hands.
Right.
About like
where the flight is.
Oh, everybody, like the holidays are coming up. Please be nice to the gate agents and the flight attendants and everyone, but please be nice. Oh, God bless America. Oh my gosh. Just, what a world. Oh, I'm so happy that we did this because it's
me too.
Because we have not.
We have not.
So I'm glad that we did. It's not your fault. It's 100% my fault.
No, I mean, it's
just,
it's
I want
just
everyone
life.
To know that.
It is just life. It is at life. This point. And here's the thing, though. Like, regardless, it is not offensive to, and it shouldn't be, no one should take offense to my love for canceling plans. No one should take offense to it because it could be anybody. And I'm like, yep, let's cancel. It sounds great. I mean, obviously, there are certain things that you don't want to cancel, but like generally.
But like postpone, like,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. Right. No, that I don't even remember what the joke was from. It was like a sketch on something. Somebody will know what it is, I hope, and can tell me what it was. But there was like a sketch of like. apps people were making, and one of them, do you know what this one it was like, it's an app where like you put a plan in with like another person, and if you want to cancel, you just, you like hit cancel, but they don't see it unless they also hit the button. So it's like you can both put it out there, just put it out there that like I don't want to do something when I could do nothing, like, and you just hit the button or whatever, and then if both of you hit it, then your plan is canceled and there's no hard feelings. I want that so badly.
I need that app.
I want it.
Is it
that's
a joke
a very
app?
Good app. It, no, I don't know. It was like a sketch, it was like a joke. Someone, I hope, really hope someone can remind me what it's from, because I want to know. It's
like, my God, I need this app.
But like, it's just, someone make that. Someone who knows how to make apps, make that app and then sell it to Instagram or whoever or whatever.
Google
sell
calendars.
It to Apple. Right, exactly. Just sell it to them for $1 billion and like whatever. Send me one tiger or whatever.
Yeah.
Not a tiger. That's not okay. But an animal that doesn't mind being in captivity.
Yeah.
But it's fine. So just whatever. You're rich. Figure it out.
Like, figure it out. We
just,
gave you the idea. Goddamn.
Oh. And then, you know, give a kickback to whoever actually made that sketch, who I can't remember. But
right.
But yeah, I want that app so badly because I mean, I can be super excited about things. Oh, right.
That's
but
the
like,
thing. Yeah.
Right. But like, if
it's between, and like, obviously I love talking to you. We talk almost every day.
I love you, Mariah. Right. I love you so much.
If there is an option to do absolutely nothing or whatever, like nothing. The thing is that I need to do, you know,
right.
Or do something else.
Right. That's really what it is. Right. Yeah. But what it is like that thing, my like dear, sweet, beautiful mother was talking about how like we were chatting last week and she like had the house to herself on a, like a Saturday, like a day off.
Yeah.
And we were just talking about how she's like, I can just, you know, like have like five different projects going, like just like start one in this room and then like walk to another room, have a different thing going on in there and just it get all five projects, you know, like 95% done, whatever. Yeah, like yeah. We're not aiming for perfection here, but just like slowly by like rotating between them.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason why it's so hard if it's like, oh no, now I have to like do with something that takes me away from all five of these tasks.
Exactly.
Like I will, that's it. Yeah. I will not complete a task for weeks now. Like what do
yes.
we?
Right. It's like so you hard. lose that motivation.
Oh. Like, it just
I spent all that time in my brain organizing it and now it's just something has come in between it.
Well, and you do more stuff with people, much more stuff with people than I do. And like that is incredible. Like, wow. How? but we were talking about how like, and again, guys, anyone who's listening to this, we love you so much.
Yeah.
And I don't know if like people who aren't like this or don't feel this way, people who like are truly like energized by spending time with others and stuff like that. Like, I don't blame folks like that if they have a hard time believing that you can authentically love being with someone and spending time with them and like want to see them and miss them and just have like just that feeling of like walking through mud to like do anything social where it's just like so hard. Why is it so hard?
It is hard.
Ugh.
We did it.
It's a lot. We did. And like both of us, I think it's like worth saying that both of us have like jobs where we that are like you're like
really
very
demanding.
Much like direct human contact. Yeah. And like for you, also a lot of like an incredible amount of paperwork.
Yeah, exactly. And just an insane amount of tasks. Like executive tasks that I have to do all day, all day.
Yeah. I do think about like times in my life where I've been much more social and that is like a major difference. Is that like the stuff I had going on in my life at the time, like my job or the work that I was doing at the time was like much more like either like not customer facing or like just didn't have the same, you're not spending like the bulk of your week doing something that like kind of taps into that social like human interaction energy.
Exactly. And like talking all the time and just like having to come up with original thoughts.
Oh, it's so hard.
Coming up with original thoughts is hard.
Oh.
And it's just all
that's
day
long. Yeah. That is like part of the like incredible magic of like creative people. It's like, look at all of these original thoughts. Like, wow. This is amazing. Like, oh my gosh. Good. And another, I had forgotten about this, but I don't know. I can't remember if we ever did this or if like the timeline just didn't, if it was just, I think it was like maybe before we lived together, but because we weren't like kind of weren't friends until we lived together.
Right. Yeah.
I'm super glad that worked out.
Yeah, me too.
Because that, but there was like a long period of time where like anytime I spent time with friends, like we would take a nap. Like we would. It's like, and it is, I miss that. That's like one of my favorite ways to spend time with somebody. If I could just like, what if we just literally are not conscious?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're next to each other, but we're not conscious. Yep. Like, let's just have a nice little like platonic nap. It's just a great way to bond. That's what you do with the cats.
It's beautiful. You
feel very close to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The cats love it. Oh my goodness. Cats love
it. They love it.
Bedtime cuddles.
If you'll just sit still and lay down.
Yeah.
That's what they like.
Yeah, exactly.
Why don't we do that more? Yeah. The wisdom. So of good. Cats. Oh, I love you. Oh my gosh, you have a fact. I want to hear it.
I posted something, and I think I texted you about this, but I posted something on the Instagram, and I just wanted to re-highlight it because it's just such an amazing... He was just such an amazing man, but Sir Robert Charlton passed away on the 21st of October, and he was one of the Manchester United players who survived the plane crash. He was one of the only ones. There are endless facts about him. Like, obviously he was born in the 30s and just died. So they're like, very,
a lot of life,
very long life. Yeah. And has done so much. But, the first thing, I don't know if you do this, but when I get into like my research tunnel rabbit hole, things, I always look at the early life. The marriage to see if they're married.
Yeah.
And he was married. Wait, where is it? Where is it? Oh, here it is. So he met his wife Norma Ball at an ice rink in Manchester in 1959. They married in 1961. And they were married until the day he died.
Oh, Norma. Oh,
sweet met at the ice Norma. Rink.
Oh,
met at the fucking ice rink. They had two daughters, Suzanne and Andrea. Suzanne was a weather forecaster on the BBC during the 90s, which is fancy.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's
that's so nice.
Just beautiful. Like, I love love, and I love long-term love. I hope they were happy. He seemed like a pretty great guy. He did like a lot of, like charity stuff, and he was just really involved. Like, he just lived a full fucking life. So I encourage everybody to kind of look into him a little bit more. But yeah, very cute, and yeah. That's Sir Bobby.
Wonderful.
I know. It's so truly.
So he was in his 90s?
Yeah. What is it?
Or late 80s?
86.
Okay. Yeah. Wow.
Incredible. And he was, he was one of Manchester's best players. And a lot of his uncles and like cousins and his brother played professional soccer, which is funny. Like, so many people. And I don't know. He just had a really cool life. So I encourage you all to take a look at least his Wikipedia page.
I do the same thing. But
Yeah.
That like the personal life thing or the early life, like just seeing, what, because I love stuff like that, because it'll have like the most random stuff. And it's if you're like in the mood to fall down a rabbit hole, A+. Like,
A+, yeah.
I have no memory of why I was looking up Joaquin Phoenix, but like finding out that Joaquin Phoenix was born in like the Children of God cult, and like his family changed their last name to Phoenix when they left the cult, so that because they're like rising from the ashes of this cult or whatever. Like, that's just great. Right. I'm so glad I read that.
I need that context.
I'm so glad to know that. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
I need to know it.
Also, yeah. I'm going to edit this out. I'm like 99% sure I'm going to edit this out because this doesn't belong on the airwaves. But like, did you say that a lot of his family also played professional soccer?
Yeah.
Yeah, that, like, how much time in your mind is dedicated to considering, like, you and Ty's genes and, like, what sports your kids would be good at?
I think about it
too much.
No, you think about that too? All the time. Yeah, Ty.
All the time.
Well, and Ty specifically talks more about what sports he, like, will refuse to let our kids play just because of safety.
Yeah.
Like, football's out. Like, he is very serious about our kids not playing football.
Ty is I just have to live with the fact that Ty is a better person than me. Like Ty's moral code is more pure than mine.
It's
because like
unmatched with anybody on this planet. I swear to God.
He's got such a like Ty, and he's so kind and gentle about it. Like there's I don't even know how many text exchanges I have with Ty where I say something and the answer is like oof. And then like, well, how about this version of that thing you just said? And I'm like, okay. Like yeah, that sounds better. But like, because obviously like football is, that's a huge, guys, just, it takes up so much mental energy.
So much.
Although I do blame Ty for that because he
yes.
made me play stupid fantasy football, yes. ruining my life. Yes. But
which you are killing at, by the way. We should tell the people that you are Ty.
Does Aaron bleep listen to this?
No, I don't think so.
That was actually one of the things.
I know.
That was actually one of the, you know what it is.
Yeah.
I was like telling the person who's doing better than me in fantasy football, I was like, we have to like collude to bring her down. And yes. Tyro back, oof. And it was because it's like, okay, is it immoral, Ty? Like, but
no, I'm,
it's just
I'm
a joke.
Working on him.
But
yeah.
No, that, the, gosh, what are they going to say? The, oh, like the tie is like our kids cannot play football because they will die. Right.
Right.
And it's horrible. And like, we love all of the, I know, like Brian asked me the other day, he's like, why do you like Tua so much? And it's like, I like Tua because he's going to like OJ his whole family in like 30
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
And, but he's like, right now he's 23, baby, and he's
right.
really good at football.
Right.
He's just going to do it. Three concussions in 2 weeks. I don't know. Who knows
exactly
what's going to happen? But he's so good at football.
So
I don't know.
Good at football.
If I loved him, like if he was my son, brother, friend, like I would be begging him to quit football.
Yeah.
But if I was him, nothing could make me quit.
No, not a
like,
single
Like, you know,
thing. Yeah.
That's, yeah. So, but I was, Brian and I were talking about that. Like, would we let our kids play football or whatever?
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, but they'd have to be like, really good at football.
Yes, very,
like,
very
what if they're,
good.
If they're in like, but I mean, like, if they're in like the top, like 0.01%, then it's kind of like, oh, are you good at baseball too or not?
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, that's, but like, if you're good at, but if you're athletic, I mean, you might as well just play baseball. Like,
yeah. There's so many other sports. There's so many other sports that, I don't know, that you can get good at.
I know.
Flag football. Let's bring back flag football. Yeah, or not
like,
bring it back.
Yeah,
I mean, we're starting to. It's going to be in the Olympics
let's
now.
Bring it. Yeah, that's good. I'm very glad about that.
Yeah.
And I think it would be, or like, rugby even because
yeah.
like the absence of pads reduces injury because they're not running into each other at the same like velocity,
right?
But yeah, oh, football, it's horrible. I don't know, they gotta, oh gosh, okay,
I want them to
football.
Play hockey.
I love you.
I love you so much.
Hockey,
yeah,
hockey in this area. Like, that's like highly plausible.
Yeah.
Like, they can play hockey.
Yeah.
Up here.
I love hockey.
Yeah. I don't know. I figure you put them in gymnastics when they're babies.
Oh,
and
yes.
then, like, let it go from there. Because, like, gymnastics when you're a baby, you get that, like,
flexibility
and, like, body awareness.
Yeah.
See where it goes from there.
Exactly.
But, yeah. I love you so, so much.
I love you too. Thanks for telling that story.
Thank you for listening.
Yeah.
You're wonderful. And I love you.
Love you.
And
we love you all. Thanks for sticking around.
Love. Oh, we love you so much, guys. You have been so gracious.
Like, yeah. There are definitely a few of you who have emailed and we have not gotten the chance to reply. We will be doing that soon.
And I know, I don't know if people like believe this, but like, it is truly such a source of joy. It is such like dessert. It is like pure dessert to get those like messages. It is so wonderful.
Yes.
And we want to give you like an actual response. And that's
why it takes
the brick wall sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's not, we want it to be a genuine thing. Yeah. And sometimes that just takes a little bit longer for bandwidth.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
But But on this night, at this time, wherever you are in the world, you're listening to this episode because we did it.
Yes.
So go team.
Yay.
Yay.
I love you.
Oh, I love you. We love you.
Bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of The Pod Crashed. We so hope you enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch with us for any reason, you can email us at thepodcrashed@gmail.com or message us on Instagram or TikTok. Love you all so, so much. It's fall. Everything is crazy and nothing makes sense. I don't know. I love you guys. Thanks for listening.